Blog Talk Radio.
I'm really only continuing to do this to try to increase my clout score. So let's be very clear about that. But welcome. We're glad you're with us on the HR Happy Hour show. It is episode 151, the LinkedIn show. Today's Thursday, November 29th, 2012. We are recording live. Our call-in number is, as always, 646-378-1086. 1086. Press 1 after you get connected. We will be sure to get you on board tonight to talk about LinkedIn. We've got a super guest, John Sumser. We'll bring him on in a minute, our featured guest tonight, to talk about LinkedIn. Of course, as always, we're sponsored by Acquire, our great friends at Acquire, the leading provider of workforce analytics solutions. You can check them out at acquire.com. That's A-Q-U-I-R-E.com. And also on the show page, the show profile page and the episode page, there's some Acquire banner ads up there that will take you to some really cool new stuff that Acquire is doing with some white papers, a free demo of their org publisher organization charting tool, and some other great stuff from Acquire. So many, many thanks to them. Also tonight, I feel like a little inspired. It's the holiday season. There's a lot of commercialism in the air, and sort of inspired by my friends at Joseph A. Bank. I do have a special offer tonight. If you do listen to the entire show, and tweet out at the end on the HR Happy Hour hashtag, you'll get four more shows probably in 2012. I'll send you three free T-shirts, two ties, a smartphone, one of those laser pointer cat toys. I've got some Andes mints, and I'll come to your house and sing you some holiday songs as well in December. So that's all for you tonight, a special offer for folks listening to the show. So, really excited to be back live on the show, working through the last part of 2012. Nothing really much has been happening for me in the last few weeks. I've been eating a lot of turkey, watching a lot of basketball. You know, I'm an NBA guy. My Knicks, my beloved Knicks, off to a great start. And, of course, my alma mater in college football, South Carolina Gamecocks, another great season, a huge win over Clemson last week, and I'm looking forward to a great bowl game coming up in a couple of weeks or at the new year. What else? Thanks to my friends at Dice. I got a nice surprise today at the door, a nice box of chocs, which I've already broken into. Had some, you know, some candy, some caramel, some brittle, so thanks to my friends at Dice, dice.com. for that. And what else? That's it. Next week, my last trip of 2012, if anyone cares, heading down to New York City for a couple of days. I'm hitting up the great little company called Select Minds. Their user conference is next week in New York City, and I'll be doing a little talk down there for our friends in New York City who've been on the show before, and I hope to get them on again as well, probably in the early part of 2013. So that's it. I think that's it for announcements. Let's get right to it. Tonight, our guest is the great John Sumser from HRExaminer.com. John at HRExaminer.com ran a really interesting set of pieces about maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, all about LinkedIn, the platform, the ecosystem, the philosophy about professional networking in general. And so after those pieces ran, I pitched John to come on the show because I thought they were great and I thought they were fascinating. And I thought it would be a great subject for us to talk about on the HR Happy Hour show. So let me welcome John right away. John, welcome back to the HR Happy Hour show.
Hey, how are you doing, Steve? It's good to talk to you. The last time I did this, I was sitting in a parking lot somewhere near your new office.
Yeah, I remember.
At Matures.
You drove off the road, had to dial in from the side of the road. I do recall that. So many thanks for taking the time out to come back to the show as well. So how's it been? How has your 2012 been, John? Let me just ask you a very general question.
Well, you know, I upped my travel days this year, and between the last week of September and the week before Thanksgiving, I was relentlessly on the road. And the thing that I learned is I'm never doing that again. There are guys out there like William Tincup who can be on the road 100% of the time. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I shared that same sentiments with a few folks lately, especially folks we saw out. You were out in Amsterdam. I was out in Amsterdam as well at HR Tech Europe recently. And for the U.S.-based folks anyway who made it out to that trip, you really do. You're sort of in the hardcore community at that point. And I felt like I was talking to Kevin Grossman out there, a good friend of the show and a good guy all around. And I felt like he and I had just been trailing each other around the country in 2012 because felt like everywhere I went, there he was, no matter what city I was in, what event I was in, when I showed up. So, but I agree, a lot of travel this year for sure. And it's funny, maybe we can talk about this a little bit during the show tonight. In this age of hyper-connectedness and networking and the plethora of platforms that we, meaning sort of the royal we, all of us together, spend online and connecting, still, I feel like there's more events, more in-person things, more. You know, that never seems to go away, and if anything else, it's gotten even more. If it's important is the right word, and I go to way more events than I ever used to, despite, my many thousands of connections I have online.
Well, you know, I think it's part of it is there's something artificial about online connections, right? And you don't really know that till you start to get to know somebody who you've only known online. And it's such a cool thing when you discover the person behind those words on the screen that I think part of what's happening is I want to have more of that, right? I really am interested in getting to know the people who I've gotten to know online better, and the only way to do that is to be there.
Yeah, I definitely agree, John. And now you're right, getting to the point where it's like, how do you find that right balance? How do you find that right mix of in-person, events? Whether I'm not even talking about big conferences or, traveling all around the country, even just local things, right? And, again, that's a tangent from what we're really going to talk about tonight, but you've talked a lot about talent and recruiting as a local exercise, right? And so
right.
even local events, whether it's, local chambers of commerce or networking clubs or even parent-teacher association meetings at the school and things like that, like none of those things are going away. And I guess that's maybe a story for another time or another show. But what we wanted to talk about tonight, or I wanted to talk tonight, and John's been gracious to join us tonight to talk about this as well, and hope to get some of the folks online engaged as well, because one thing's for certain, when we're going to talk about a subject like LinkedIn, at least in the HR talent recruiting space, everybody's aware of it, everybody's got an opinion. I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, John, in Northern Virginia. It was a local, HR event, really nice event. And I was giving a little talk about technology or something or other. Doesn't matter. There's 100 people there probably, right? So, and of course, we're talking about technology and how it's impacting talent recruiting. The subject of LinkedIn came up. And I almost as an aside, said, oh, everyone's on LinkedIn, right? You all know this, so I don't have to, get into this. And one person raised her hand, one person in the room, and said, I don't have a LinkedIn profile. It was the one person, at least, who would admit to it. And I got to tell you, I was stunned. I was shocked that, in an HR event, a professional networking event in HR, there was anybody who hadn't created a LinkedIn profile or at least would have admitted to it in public like that. I was stunned. I even wrote about it on the blog, and as I found out later, someone contacted me to tell me that that person actually did relent and created her profile after she had been sort of singled out to be ridiculed. But, LinkedIn today is such a it's like the 300-pound gorilla in the talent game. So let me just start, as we talk about LinkedIn tonight, what led you at HR Examiner to decide, let's devote a week to this and explore LinkedIn? What are your sort of general thoughts on LinkedIn? And then we'll get into some of the specifics of the topics that you brought up on HR Examiner and we want to talk about tonight.
So I went to the LinkedIn Users Conference and delivered a presentation at the LinkedIn Users Conference. And And I was sort of surprised at who was there and what they were doing. And so coming out of that user conference, I started asking all the people that I met on the road what percentage of their hires came from active job hunters and what percentage of their hires came from passive job hunters or inactive job hunters. Right, because you'd think with all this hype about LinkedIn that the only way anybody was recruiting was by looking for passive job hunters. And uniformly, all of the recruiting managers that I talked to gave a number between 80 and 85% are active job hunters. So they get them by advertising on job boards. They get them because the resumes come in over the transom. And they're not. It's not like LinkedIn is a dominant way of recruiting. And that really got my attention. It really, really got my attention because it's easy in our little social media bubble to think that the only way that people recruit is proactively, and it's just not true.
Right.
It's just not how it happens.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, right? And that can take you into some of the whole, you know, death of, you know, recruiting technology XYZ that's all going to be usurped by LinkedIn, whether it's the job boards or the ATS system or, you know, even the third-party recruiter, quite frankly, right? Not technology, but more mechanism, right? It's nice to say those things, that all these things are going to be – there certainly have been disrupted. I'm not trying to argue that they haven't been, but they certainly haven't been replaced, right? And I think your experience at the LinkedIn conference kind of bears that out as well, right?
Yeah, well, so it's like you look at Amazon, and Amazon's destroyed the book business. Absolutely, there are very, very few independent bookstores left,
right?
And only Barnes and Noble is hanging in there as a chain bookstore. Amazon is doing that in lots of retail sectors. When you go to the main street of the town I do grocery shopping in, there's a lot of empty stores because retail happens online now. That's not exactly what's happening with recruiting. Business-to-business stuff is not evolving the same way that consumer stuff is. And this actually opens the door to a big conversation about whether or not you can actually consumerize enterprise technology and whether or not the behavior that you see in disruption in the consumer sector actually applies in business-to-business issues, right?
Because
the truth is, seeking passive candidates, looking for people who are not looking for your job, is a vastly more expensive way to recruit. And you don't want to do it all the time just because you can. There's all sorts of expensive stuff that I like to do that I don't do all the time just because I could.
Right.
And so that makes you wonder what's the real value in LinkedIn, because it's not the replacement of Monster.com. It's a supplement to Monster.com.
Yeah, and I think that those are some great points, John. Right? I think in the rush to brand LinkedIn or the next LinkedIn, maybe that'll come after it, and we're going to talk about this a little bit on the show tonight, some of the ancillary or niche communities that have LinkedIn-like qualities that are springing up and in some levels nipping at LinkedIn's dominance in the professional networking space. It's the transaction of seeking a new job or entertaining a new job or you know, being open to talk about a new job and things like that, I think there's a lot of uniqueness to it. I don't think it's easily equated to other types of purchasing decisions, if we want to equate them to that in the B2B, you know, the B2C kind of commerce space, like the Amazon space or buying, you know, I don't know, or any kind of reviews, like going to a restaurant, right? You know, we're talking about LinkedIn, but you could introduce, say, a site like Glassdoor to the conversation and say, well, people are going to go to Glassdoor and read reviews of the employer and read about the employment experience and read about, you know, the interview process at a company. But to me, I don't know, I'm just not seeing the one-to-one equivalency to say, I want to get a hamburger tonight in an unfamiliar city, right? where should I go? I'll just look at Yelp. I'll take stranger's word for it, right? Because it's not a significant decision overall. Even if I make it poorly, I'll get over it pretty quick.
Right. So I think that's a piece of it. The hype is bigger than the reality with LinkedIn, and so right sizing that is part of what we wanted to do with the series about LinkedIn. Is just go, okay, this is a really big important thing, but it's only 20%.
Yeah, and I think one of the first things I wanted to ask you about the series, and I believe this is a piece that Heather Bussing wrote on Examiner, which really talked about the nature of connecting on LinkedIn, and she told the story from her personal perspective, but I got, quite frankly, it resonated with me. My experience is very similar in that it's, and I'll summarize it if I can, and maybe you can comment on it or tell me I'm wrong about the point of the piece, but that originally when LinkedIn first started to become a known quantity and people were starting to go there and create profiles and connect with people, it seemed like this was a place where you should connect with people you either work with right now in your company or in your business, whatever your business is, maybe, you know, or you've worked with very closely in the recent past, fairly recent past. It seemed like a place where almost, maybe I'm too strong in assuming this, but like the people I'd connect with on LinkedIn would be people I'd be comfortable saying, I will be a professional reference for this person if they're trying to find a job in the future. Kind of how it felt, not in any necessarily a stated way, but certainly in how LinkedIn kind of pushed it, right? When you were connecting with someone, LinkedIn would ask you a question, say, like, do you really know this person? Only send an invitation to people you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And now that's out the door, right? I mean,
right.
I probably get, you know, maybe 10 LinkedIn invitation requests a week. I would say 9 of them are for people I've never met, right? And I'm not uncommon in this case. So I'd love for you to comment a little bit about the nature of sort of professional networking in this LinkedIn environment and how it's changed over the years.
Well, so that's a really interesting question. You know, the original view of LinkedIn, and it was enforced, the original view of LinkedIn was that you should only have networks of people who you know well. And I remember there was a time, because innovation really explodes into HR through the recruiting function. And so whenever you introduce some technology in recruiting, you get people hacking it. And so it wasn't long before there were a ton of recruiters complaining about only being able to get 2,500 connections on LinkedIn because that was the ceiling.
Right.
And there were a number of folks who had their accounts closed by LinkedIn because they aggressively tried to exceed 2,500.
And so
LinkedIn was very, their view was that the way that business networking worked was you did it through people that you know, and that's what you ought to focus on. And so they really enforced that. It wasn't a little bit. It wasn't ever written as policy, but it was enforced as policy.
Right.
And now I certainly don't have 30,000 contacts on LinkedIn, but Glenn Cathy, the bullion black belt guy, has 30,000, and I'm sure there's a ton of I get contacted all the time now by people who are in the top 20 most connected people on LinkedIn, and they have a galaxy full of connections, and it's really interesting. And what happened was, it turns out that the people that you know are not very good connections when you're looking for work.
Right, they're no help. Right, they're not much help. Right.
They're not much help because if the economy's bad, they're riding the same economic wave that you are. So
yeah.
If the economy's bad and you're looking for a job, they're scared about their jobs too. The people who can help you in your job hunt and the people who can help you grow your business are the people you don't know very well.
I mean, this goes back, and it's my favorite, like, probably research citation ever, you know, that I used to use when I was teaching is the strength of weak ties, right? And it's not a novel concept. I mean, that paper was published 40 years ago, right? And it was true then, and it's true now, right? And a lot of what was behind that research, right, was job seeking. That was the experiment that Granovetter was doing, right? One of them that led to that paper, which sort of said the same thing, John, right? You're out there looking for work. The people you know, your close friends, your first cousins, the guy who lives next door to you, is not the guy who's going to help you. It's someone you really don't hardly know, but because he knows or she knows people that you don't have access to yet, right?
Right. And so it's real. I found that very counterintuitive. It seemed to me like there was something wrong with me because my friends couldn't help me in the way that it looked like everybody else was getting helped on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And now that they've loosened that up and they're talking about loose connections being the way that things happen, I'm starting to understand that in my life, and I don't think I could see that before I experimented with LinkedIn. So LinkedIn is great for opening up those opportunities that come from loose connections, right?
Yeah, and it's such a strange thing. I mean, and again, I like to, you know, because I'm a simple guy. I like to think my experience with something must be universal, because if it's happening to me, it must happen to lots of people. And now my attitude with it has become certainly, well, if this person is in the industry or has a job that's similar enough to what I do, or, you know, they have a title that's, you know, it doesn't matter if I don't know them. I say yes, right? I don't care, right? What's the difference, right? And I know I've advised people the same thing, right? Connect with as many people in the industry as you can. You don't really need to know them. Don't worry about it, right? And that's definitely different. I'm not saying, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's different, and it's certainly different from how it used to be. You
know? I don't know if it's good or bad either, but it seems to me that I do two things. I'm not sure why I have a network on LinkedIn.
And
what I mean is the way that I use LinkedIn is when I get a phone call from somebody I don't know, I go to LinkedIn and look them up.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in knowing if they know somebody who's connected to me. But I don't ever go look up the people who are connected to me because I either don't know them or I know them so well that I don't need to look them up.
You don't need to look them up, right? Exactly.
Right?
That's a great point.
Right. So it's not clear to me why I have a network there, but it's clear that the people who I don't know very well tend to be connected to the people who I get in touch with, who are the most interesting outside of my normal network. So I'm not sure that I use it the way that LinkedIn wishes that I would use it, and I'm not sure that anybody really does.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. It's interesting how it's changed. It's interesting how people are using it. And, you know, I'd love for folks maybe who are following on the back channel. Let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. Our guest tonight is John Sumser. We're talking about LinkedIn, of course, tonight. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. Press 1 after you get connected. We'll be sure to get you on board tonight to join the conversation. If you're listening and hanging out on the back channel on Twitter, lots of folks out there tonight, so I'm waving hi to you all. Hello. Our hashtag is HRHappyHour, so if folks want to chime in and maybe even talk about how your approach to connections is on LinkedIn as well. Do you limit it to people you know well or have worked with or could vouch for? Are you pretty open, you know, in your industry or your field or maybe even your location? It's an interesting question, and we'd love to see some folks chime in about that as well. The other, you know, one of the other topics, John, that we wanted to talk about tonight. Well, I'll tell you one last story about connections, though. And then I thought this is funny, and I think it happened to me, so of course I think it's funnier than it probably is. So I went to college. Right, of course, right? Because if it happened to me, it must be interesting. So
it's universal and funny, Steve.
I went to college with a guy, a good friend of mine in college, and he kind of had an unusual name. This was his real name, not a nickname. His name was Waddy. W-A-D-D-Y. That was his real first name. His last name was kind of a common last name, which I won't say on the show. But let's say it was Jackson for just to tell the story. So, kind of an unusual name, right? And so, like lots of people, years pass, you lose touch, right? I wasn't really sure what had become of my friend Waddy. Sometime later on LinkedIn, right, a year or so ago, in that classic, you know, well, you might know these people. They might be good for you to connect with, right? That list that used to be like 4 or 5 people, now it goes for pages and pages and pages. His name was on it. No picture, right? So the profile didn't have a picture, so I couldn't verify it was really him. But, you know, Waddy Jackson, such and such, in the same location about where I went to school. And I figured it was him, right? Who else could it be? That's just kind of a – so I sent an invite, and I even personalized it. Hey, great to see you. Boy, we had some fun times in college, you know. Hope you're doing well. Connection request. And I get the email back from the guy or the denier. So I don't know who you're talking about. I'm not that guy. You know, I'm a musician. I lived in Argentina back then. You know, it was completely the wrong person, right? And I'm thinking, what is with me? Like, how could I, you know? And I just thought, like, boy, this is a professional networking site. I don't even know who this is. I'm trying to connect with a guitar player from Argentina, and LinkedIn was encouraging me to do it. Right. And I just, like, to me, that little story summarizes in a way, like, how that whole environment has changed.
You know, I take it back, Steve. That you're the only person that's ever happened to.
Yeah, probably. So if you're out there, Waddy, listening tonight, I apologize, buddy, and get back in touch. So,
Waddy's a great name for a guitar player. Maybe you should get in touch with your friend and tell him to change careers.
I probably should. I probably ought to. John, one of the other things we wanted to talk about tonight was, so LinkedIn is growing and growing and growing. We've all seen the stats, and, you know, it's gone from 20 million to 50 million to 150 million. It's probably pushing 200 million profiles now. It's become the sort of de facto professional networking site, certainly here in the U.S., growing around the world, fairly rapidly, some places more than others. But one of the things that interestingly came up, and you wrote about it in the HR Examiner, it's been covered a little bit lately, is, well, LinkedIn is not the only place for professional networking. And if something were to disrupt LinkedIn itself, what might that be? So I'd love for you maybe to comment a little bit about some of the, maybe some of the weaknesses in LinkedIn and as a professional networking platform, and what you're seeing in the industry is some of the things that might be have the potential to disrupt LinkedIn going forward.
So LinkedIn, LinkedIn starts with the idea that networks are global, right? Because everybody has a network on LinkedIn, and you can have a network with anybody anywhere. And the truth is that in the United States, let's just do the United States, 80% of the people who live in the United States don't live in the top 50 cities. They live in cities the size of Sioux City. There are 250 to 300,000 people, and 2 hours from any adjacent city. So relocation isn't really what people do. They don't look globally for stuff. So in the real recruiting in the United States, background checking looks like this. Hey, Steve, I didn't see you in church on Sunday.
Right,
because it's a small community. If you are in Sioux City, there are two industries, and you're in either, you know, the dog food industry or the insurance industry or the stack of services that support it in education and retail and hospitality and government. And if you live in Sioux City and you're in the dog food industry, I don't think they actually have one in Sioux City, so I'm making that up, but you're in one of the two major industries in town, you don't move over to the other industry. Your job is going to be working with the 40,000 people in Sioux City who work inside of that industry. That's where your career is going to be. Your skills are not transferable, and you're not going to move. So the idea that what you need is some sort of massive global network is sort of silly. It may be that you need to identify the people you don't know inside of that 40,000 mix, but it's probably the case that if you want to really navigate your career well, if you knew the right 250 people in Sioux City, I can't imagine that you'd need a network that's bigger.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, John. That number is probably really small. And if you had a way to find the more connected people or the ones that have the right connections, that number is even smaller. That might be as small as 25 people that can get you to the right 2,000 people you would need to potentially know in an environment like that.
Yeah, so what that means is that the disruptors of LinkedIn are going to be local things, right? They're going to be My assistant just came with a note that says it is a dog food town in Sioux City. The Purina Mills are in Sioux City. But what's going to disrupt LinkedIn are little things.
And we're
personalization
starting to see a little bit
is going to come
right?
to everywhere.
Yeah.
Sorry?
And we're starting to see more and more of that, right? And maybe it's because as link is it you know if we talk about some smaller the theory being the disruption to a giant platform like LinkedIn, the de facto professional networking site, the disruptor, it's going to be local things, niche things, targeted things, platforms that cater to a locality, a discipline, a school maybe, like, or a set of schools. I don't know, whatever these other things are that can bind people together, right?
Right.
That's the disruptor. So like in the classic example that's been, it's not new, right? It's been around for a while now. It was in the high tech space, right? In the engineering space. So, you know, communities like Stack Overflow or GitHub, right, have really risen in prominence, not just for their community aspect. I mean, initially they became a place where, well, you know, where software developers and software engineers could congregate in a real kind of community setting, right, because there was a give and take of information, there was shared value, there was value being added and extracted, there was, you know, many of them have some of the other trendy things, you know, with, say, gaming elements and leaderboards and things like that, and reputation being developed there, and then, you know, it becomes apparent to companies who are looking for people like that, hey, I should go there too and find people there and find talented people there. I mean, you're out, John, in the Bay Area. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about how you see networks like that, not just in the high-tech space, but is the potential for that going forward to be something that really truly could be disruptive to LinkedIn?
So I'm sure that the dynamic that you're describing is exactly going to happen. You can sort of see it. There are a number of recruiting-oriented, unconferency kinds of things that bounce around the United States from town to town. And when they land, if somebody from the local community hasn't been involved, then the only people who show up are friends of the people who are throwing the unconference. Because local people need local people to do local stuff. You can't really import it from the outside. You can't give it top down. You can't mandate it from a big thing. So what happens is things take on a life of their own. And the Bay Area is an interesting set of contradictions, but I'd point you at Minneapolis or Seattle or D.C., where there are communities of all sorts of types banding together that are something like professional associations used to be, with a slightly bigger social component to them. So I'm thinking in particular of the recruiting communities, but I know in D.C. that it's also true of a good number of professional communities. And in cities that have a lot of academic infrastructure, like New York or Boston or Minneapolis or Seattle or San Francisco, Austin, the professional association, because it feels sort of like an academic environment sometimes, right, does this stuff. Right, and they're really vibrant, interesting places where networking happens amongst people who don't know each other very well, but share an interest in underwater basket weaving or some special soldering technique or something. And so it becomes a combination of local and professional interest.
Yeah, and I think that's what's interesting about it, because, again, pulling it back to the LinkedIn discussion, whether it's underwater basket weaving or some sort of technical discipline or even, you know, a specific kind of technology, what LinkedIn attempts to do and encourages you to do, and lots of people have done to very various levels of success, is to try to create those little micro communities inside that platform, inside that walled garden, right? So, like, if you'll go, and that's, you know, typically the group's functionality, right? And so you'll be there's probably a LinkedIn group that someone sponsored, probably some recruiter, for underwater basket weaving, right? And that, or a company that's in that business trying to do what they can in that platform, because they know lots of people are there, and there's lots of, you know, names there and lots of profiles there, and say, let's create this underwater basket weaving community here in this big platform, because I know everybody's here and I can pay a few dollars each month and get access to, you know, to see everybody's profile and send them lots of messages, right?
Right. Now there's a problem, though. I see something in the back channel from China Gorman who's making lots of noise.
She's causing trouble, China Gorman, tonight.
She's causing trouble in the back channel. But she raises the really smart question about whether or not organizations like Talent Bin will disrupt LinkedIn. And I'm sure that the people who run things like Talent Bin and Guild and the other professional data aggregators,
right,
hope to displace LinkedIn. I'm sure that any number of them see that as the big game. But there's a really interesting dynamic that happens, right? So those places, which to make sure I'm not speaking in code, they go out and spider all sorts of social graph content about people, and then assemble dossiers on people. So
right.
it's a very complicated chunk of data that they then try to simplify. Guild goes out and does a deep scoring analysis of technical players. Talent Bin goes and assembles lots of packages of stuff. And here's what happens that's really interesting. If you're a technical professional and your name is inside of those databases, your phone rings off the hook.
Right.
And so the consequence of those things making professionals visible to recruiters is that they stop doing the things that make them visible to recruiters. And that's the dynamic that'll really disrupt LinkedIn.
Right.
If you're in a high visibility position, or if you are in a high demand profession, then having a resume on LinkedIn means that your phone rings off the hook and you have to spend your time talking to damn recruiters. And what happens is you take your profile down.
Right, exactly. And that is sort of an antithesis, right? Because the theoretically, right, if you want to look at this really simplistically, those less in demand positions and the less desirable jobs, the ones that are theoretically, they're not always, and I'm overgeneralizing, I'm sure, but they're typically maybe easier to fill. And to get you back to a point, John, that you talked about earlier in the show, you could do it much more cheaply and effectively using traditional methods. Right?
Right.
Job boards, company website, Craigslist ad, whatever those tactics are for your job and for your region. You don't really need LinkedIn, especially an expensive LinkedIn license, right, to adequately get a supply of good candidates for those kinds of roles, right? And so LinkedIn certainly is relying on, at one level, and they've got a lot of elements to their business, which is smart by them, right? They're not relying only on one sort of value proposition to make their money, but that's significant, though. If more recruiters went to LinkedIn and ponied up a lot of money for advanced or corporate licenses to offer the various search capabilities and access to profiles that they do, and we're finding, hey, we're just not finding the people that we used to be able to find here, then that would be a challenge and a threat to LinkedIn, certainly.
Yeah, although, you know, so I'm doing some pretty interesting work looking at what talent shortages are and how they operate, and some of it is real shortages of real people, but another component of it is people hiding.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you what, I saw you post about this. You're getting into this skills gap kind of question and talent shortage question. You've got to come back once you're sort of ready. We've got to do a whole show on the skills gap and the shortage. I am absolutely on fire about that. And, you know, I have my opinion, but I am, you know, as an aside, we have to bring that. We have to do a show on that because.
Well, that's good. I'm going to be devoting a good deal of attention to it in the HR Examiner over the coming year. So.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm tell you what, we're going to kill that. So let me just do a quick reset. Take a breath, everybody. You know, huge, Good turnout on the back channel tonight on the HR Happy Hour, John. You're a big star. I knew booking John Sumser was a smart move for me, right? I knew it. So I'm glad to see lots of folks on the back channel tonight. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. We have about 20 minutes left in the show. Folks are on hold. There's a bunch of folks just listening on the listener line. That is great. If any of you guys want to come on board, just press 1 on your phone, and I'll know to open up your line, bring you on board to ask a question or make a comment, or just tell John and I how fantastic we are. That's accepted as well. You know, there's probably people listening to this show tweeting on the hashtag right now, John, that we are not even LinkedIn connected to, ironically enough. So if you want to, you know, if one night only, you know, you want to send us a LinkedIn request, you know, I know I'll accept it. Yeah, John.
Yeah, I'll accept it too, although I'll tell you, it isn't one night only if you send me a note, unless I just can't figure out why I'd want to know you.
Yeah, every so often. I do. I will say this. Every so often I do get a LinkedIn request, and someone will put in, hey, I heard the HR Happy Hour show. So that does make me feel good, and I always say yes to those requests. But then again, like you said, you mentioned earlier in the show, John, I'm not sure, you said you weren't sure what kind of value you were getting out of your LinkedIn network. I'd say the same thing. Now, you and I are not recruiters, right? We're not sourcing people to find, or we're not looking for candidates. At least I'm not. I know I'm not. I don't think you are either at this point in your career, John. So, you know, I know the direct value for people who do that for a living. I totally get that. But, yeah, I wonder that myself. I spend a fair amount of time on LinkedIn, like lots of people do, and probably more than the average user by far. And I do sometimes wonder, like, what the heck I'm doing here. But, you know, the other thing, John, I wanted to talk about, and this is maybe a little bit more of my pet peeve, and you talked about this a little bit in one of the Examiner pieces about the LinkedIn ecosystem. And maybe I'll say it shortly, and then we can talk about it a little more expansively. But I feel like LinkedIn has done some things and is doing some things or might ultimately do some things that like, if Facebook did them or has done them or Twitter did them or other networks did them, we would kill them, right? We'd kill them for cutting off API access or selling user data, which is essentially what LinkedIn is doing, right? Your profile data is, you know, they're selling, packaging that up with everybody else's profile data and selling that to lots of people. And LinkedIn just gets a pass for all of this, right? Because enough people have continued to see the value of having an active presence on LinkedIn and an updated profile and the various tools that individual users get from LinkedIn. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about sort of the ecosystem of LinkedIn and the platform of LinkedIn beyond just the, you know, should I connect with Bob or Sally kind of question.
So I think the fundamental problem, you know, we talked in the beginning about the LinkedIn's change in the way that it sees itself, and the reason that it stopped thinking that tight networks were the answer and big networks became the answer is because you can sell more ads if people have big networks. You get more page views. The bigger your network, the more pages you consume. And so you can expect LinkedIn to look at its data and move towards the money. But since they're really trying to figure out what business they're in still, the recruiting business is not big enough to get them to be a $10 billion company. They're going to have to do some other things. They're really crummy about letting ideas that might make money slip through their hands. So where Facebook, if you look at Facebook's new job board, it's really very little Facebook and a whole lot of direct employers and work for labs and Monster. Because Facebook doesn't really want to be in the job board business.
Right, right.
Right, and so they know they don't want to be in that business, so they let it go. I think it gets called a Facebook job board, but you can't really see much in the way of Facebook involvement in it. At LinkedIn, anything that looks like it might make a penny, they get really scared about letting it go by. And that's partly because it's not really a conversational community like Facebook is, and there's not really a good model for making money off of people who are just data.
Right.
And so there's this kind of embedded paranoia in the company that says, anything that looks like a money-making opportunity, we have to try to figure out how to harvest ourselves. If you look at the rest of the universe, Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, although Microsoft is closer to LinkedIn than not, what they've done is they have expanded the ecosystem so that they understand when other people make money, they make money.
Yeah.
Right? And so you see these robust environments like Apple's app ecosystem, or it's starting to take root at Salesforce and the Salesforce ecosystem.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Right.
And that comes from letting go of some things, and it's been really hard for the Facebook people to do it. So, like the careers they interfered with when they aggressively enforced their 2,500 person limit a couple of years ago, they get scared about people making money and terminate API access. And it makes people look for more ways to steal their data, and it makes people less likely to make investments, and that stifles LinkedIn's growth in the long haul.
Yeah, and then it forces the innovation to have to come from within LinkedIn, right?
Right.
Versus the myriad of developers or smart companies around the outside that might be able to innovate around that platform and add value to the overall ecosystem beyond just the LinkedIn, platform itself. I get an email every 3 days from LinkedIn, pitching me to upgrade my account, and I feel like, I want a little kickback from them and sometimes when I'm particularly cranky, I think everybody else should too. Every person out there with 100% complete profile that gets, and you can look at your stats, right? How many times you came up in searches and things like that, and those profiles are all being packaged up and sold, right? The access to them is being sold to people you don't even know, and we're all okay with that. Facebook did that, and I guess they do it too. But every time people figure out that they're doing it, we get outraged by it. Or some people do. I don't really care. But some people do. And LinkedIn does it every day. That's a big part of their business. But I still get pitched from them to give them money for a premium account that I feel like, hey, I'm part of the value. I'm being sold over there, too. Not that I don't get personal value out of being on LinkedIn. I feel like I do or I wouldn't be there. But you know what I'm saying? That tension exists, at least it does for me, or maybe I'm overly sensitive.
No. But you don't understand. The reason I have a premium account is so now I know that you look at my profile every day.
Right.
So, Steve, it's time for a reset.
Reset. All right. Quick reset. HR Happy Hour show. This is HR Happy Hour 151. We're talking all about LinkedIn. My name is Steve Bowes. My guest tonight is John Sumser. Our call-in number. Last chance on the call-in number. There's about a dozen people, John, on the line, but no one wants to come on board. But if you're on the line on hold and you want to come on board, if you've called in to 646-378-1086, just press 1. We'll open up your line to ask a question, make a comment, or just say hello. Folks in the back channel, I'm trying to keep an eye. I'm a little shaky. I'm keeping an eye on the back channel tweets tonight, but I'm actually trying to listen to the conversation for a change, John. It's hard for me. I'm a simple guy. It's hard to do more than two things at once. So I will keep an eye on the back channel a little bit as well. Our hashtag's HR Happy Hour. Some folks out there tonight. We appreciate all you guys hanging out with us tonight as well. So, as we speak, John, I do have another tab open. My email is open. I did get a LinkedIn request. I don't think it's – so I'll just say this. If Jaya Sharini Bella Pulai is listening to the show, thank you for that LinkedIn invitation. I will accept it momentarily. So thank you, Jaya Shri. So, hey, we've got just a few minutes left in the show, about 10 minutes left. The last thing we sort of wanted to talk about, or I thought might be interesting to talk about, and maybe it's a little too inside, but maybe we'll kick it around anyway, is the idea of LinkedIn becoming more of a player, more relevant inside the enterprise, more than just as a sourcing tool, but in the HR talent management space, exactly. What other areas might LinkedIn look to disrupt the industry, the typical industry, right? So things like career development, succession planning, even compensation planning. You know, I don't know. You can speculate. Like LinkedIn as more of an enterprise solution beyond recruiting. Is that something, John, you see as a potential for them? Is something you've ever thought about, or is it really, you know, people have volunteered enough information to LinkedIn, corporations would be reluctant to have their people volunteer even more information to LinkedIn for some of those processes?
Well, it's really interesting. So this is part of what was the story at the LinkedIn Users Conference. LinkedIn is very interested in having companies have their people put their profiles on LinkedIn. And so when they talk to their user base, there's a lot of cheerleading about that. And there's some interesting things that you get out of doing that, right? The internal databases of employee profiles and work experiences are generally not very good and not very deep. And so it's already the case. If you're a company that employs white-collar workers, LinkedIn knows more about your workforce than you do.
Right, right.
They know what the informal networks look like. They know what the career paths inside of your company look like. You know, so I don't know what percentage of people at your employer are on LinkedIn, but I would guess that most of them are. And what that means is that LinkedIn can run an analysis and find out what the junior software development engineer next logical step is and find 15 pieces of evidence. So LinkedIn is already capable of doing really interesting things like arming employees who want to get a raise or a promotion with evidence that other people in the organization have gotten a promotion on the same time frame. Right? And that really opens up a lot of interesting legal issues. Right? So if you roll in and you can go to LinkedIn and find out that 45 people who had your job last year got promoted and you didn't.
Right, right. The average tenure in your industry for someone in that role just like you, exactly. I mean, that kind of information, which big companies do everything they can to keep from people for the most part, if it did become available to the average person in the organization, that become very empowering for people, I think.
I think, Steve, if you really wanted it, you could go to LinkedIn and get it with a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I think you could figure it out. You could. If you applied yourself enough, I think you could, yeah.
So it's just a question of time before somebody automates it, and it's one of those things that's so obvious that that it's a reason that the LinkedIn API doesn't give access to all of the information that's in the profile.
Now, I'm going to have you pause for 1 second. We do have someone who wants to get on board and ask a question or make a comment.
Cool.
Let me open up their line. Line number 5, you are area code 206. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Steve, Lance Hahn here.
Lance Hahn, what's up, brother?
How's it going, John?
Hi, Lance.
Hey, just a quick comment there. Just talking about kind of what LinkedIn is looking at doing long term. One of the things that Jeff Weiner, the CEO of LinkedIn, mentioned, I think it was last week, was the fact that they want to do a little bit more than even what John's suggesting here and really get the underpinnings of the entire business landscape from the talent on up, basically. So their goals are lofty beyond dreams. Now, can they do that? I think that's tougher to figure out.
I saw that too, Lance. That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the interesting things that they're really trying to do is map out and really be smarter than what you can be internally. And I think that was a great point that John made. So I just wanted to come in and make that comment because it's very interesting just from an observer standpoint, and I know John's in that same boat. I mean, just to see what they're trying to do and how that manifests itself in some of the decisions they make as a company and the products they release.
No, that's a great point. Yeah, right. because there's a whole side of LinkedIn, which we have not really talked about tonight on the show, because, you know, our shows, you know, the HR Happy Hour, we're talking really through the lens of the HR, the talent, the recruiting professional. But as you mentioned, Lance, there's a whole sales slash commerce, you know, prospecting kind of side to LinkedIn that's really important to them, and it's probably one of the reasons, right, that LinkedIn has grown. So, I mean, there's only so many recruiters out there. There's like, you know what I mean? Like, and LinkedIn continues to grow, not just on the backs of the HR talent kind of plays, but also the general business plays, the sales plays, the CRM kind of plays as well.
I think that's right, although I think there's a pretty interesting next layer of stuff. I mean, if you know career paths and you know the actual human capital inventory of say all of the major companies in the San Francisco Bay Area, then there's a whole business that you could have handicapping the stock market.
Right.
There's a whole business that you could have auditing companies' ability to execute the work that they're contracted to do.
Right.
I mean, it gets once the database gets complete, it gets very interesting. And the only caveat there is that the landscape doesn't look like what's in the LinkedIn database right now. The LinkedIn database is heavily biased towards the coasts. It's biased towards white-collar workers on the coasts. And it has... I think the last time I saw a number, it was 60 or 70 million American profiles. And there's somewhere between 160 and 180 million people in the workforce. So it's got some distance to go before it can really do those things.
Hey, I've got one more. Lance, hang on for one second. And, John, I've got one more caller I want to squeeze on. We've got about 3 minutes left in the show. Hi, area code 661. You're on the HR Happy Hour show.
Hi, Steve, I just sent you an invite via LinkedIn, so this is Jayashree Velupillai.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
thank you
right.
so much. That was you. I'm going to accept. Thank you very much. I love that.
Great, okay. Yeah, okay, so I just wanted to share my personal kind of experience in terms of using LinkedIn as a recruitment tool myself. And I've had a few success stories using LinkedIn, and a few of my employees, like three or four of my employees, are from LinkedIn. So I just wanted to make a point that LinkedIn, for me, I've used it quite a lot for recruitment purposes, and it is not only it pushes jobs onto your timeline sometimes, so it is not only it will definitely interest people who are passive job seekers for them to kind of look at it once in a while and say, maybe. So I don't think that only active people, active job seekers use LinkedIn, but also passive job seekers.
Yeah, Jayashree, I think you're right. I think that's a great observation, and I'm glad that, first of all, thank you for the invite. Thank you for listening to the show, and really thank you for calling in and jumping in. Lance Hahn, that's a rookie jumping into the HR Happy Hour mix with a take, very strong, a lot of confidence. That's full. That's five-star right there.
That is five-star.
I agree.
Thank you, Jayashree, thank you so much. Hey, Lance, thank you. John, we got a minute to go, a minute and a half to go. I knew we wouldn't get to all the subjects, but, hey, it was a great conversation anyway. And I'm first of all, many thanks for taking the time out to be with us again tonight and taking the time out of your schedule.
This is always a ton of fun. I really enjoy the conversation, and it's great that there are places like this where thoughtful conversations can happen.
Hey, John, I appreciate it so much. What's next? What should we be looking for? HRExaminer.com, of course. And then anything else, John, that we should be on the lookout for from you in the next...
I'm doing some really interesting work in several areas. I'm looking at gamification. I'm looking at big data and doing some really interesting things with big data. I'm looking at big data as a way to drive prioritization and recruiting budgets and doing some work with that. I'm getting ready to have an amazing time hosting the Bloggers Lounge at Surge at Sherm again this year.
All right. Well, fantastic, John. We look forward to that. We'll see you there. Lance Hahn, thank you so much for jumping in. Lance, tomorrow, check my blog. I've got a Damien Lillard piece you don't want to miss. I know you'll be interested in it.
Damien Lillard?
Yeah, from the Portland Trailblazers. That Lance knows who I'm talking about. course. And Jay Sheree, thank you so much as well. That's it. We're out. We got 15 seconds to go. Thanks to our friends at Acquire. Thanks to everybody who listened. Thanks to the Back Channel. We'll see you next time on the HR Happy Hour Show. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jay Sheree. Thanks, Lynn.